Hey everyone, welcome to this episode of the Seabros Fishing Podcast. This episode is brought to you by Mass Bay Guides. Mass Bay Guides is a family-run charter fishing fleet based out of Scituate, Massachusetts. We've been providing anglers with the ultimate fishing adventure for over 20 years. Whether you're looking to put together a multi-boat corporate fishing trip, or you're an avid angler that travels the world and you're looking to catch a giant bluefin tuna, the Mass Bay Guides crew will do anything it takes to make sure you, your friends, and your family have a great day on the water. To book a trip with us, visit the Mass Bay Guides website at massbayguides.com. And for the latest reports, content, and other info, you can follow us on Facebook and Instagram at Mass Bay Guides. This episode is also brought to you by Deep. New England born and bred, Deep is inspired by the fit of the skate and surf retail world, anchored in the technical aspects of the outdoor and offshore fishing apparel market. Deep designs clothes that bring comfort in the elements and also at the bar and restaurant. If you guys visit www.shopdeep.com, you can check out all the new apparel that they have coming out this spring. And if you use the promo code SEARSBRO, that's S-E-A-R-S, BRO, 20, you get 20% off your next order. We love these guys. We've been friends with them for a while. What's cool about this company is, you know, some of the owners actually, they actually fish. They fish offshore. They fish the canyons. They giant tuna fish. They have a really, really good offshore program. So, you know, they're making apparel and gear that, you know, truly does fit kind of the lifestyle and some of the requirements that we have in the offshore fishing world. Our guest on today's show has been a good friend of ours for over a decade. He's our neighbor down at the docks in Scituate, and he has over 40 years experience fishing the inshore and offshore waters of New England, including over 100 trips to the Northeast Canyons. He has an extreme passion for experiencing fisheries around the world, and he has traveled and fished in locations such as Venezuela, the Dominican Republic, Puerto Rico, Cabo San Lucas, Mexico, Hawaii, a lot of different places in Florida, and Prince Edward Island, Canada. He's written many articles for well-known sport fishing publications, including On the Water magazine and Big Game Journal. One of his areas of expertise is sharing his passion for fishing with his kids and anyone new to the fishing world. In this episode, he shares some awesome tips for getting kids into fishing using his great fish storytelling abilities. Please welcome to the podcast, Captain Frank Pitten. Welcome to the Seabros Fishing Podcast. So thank you for coming in, Frank. I really appreciate it.
Thanks for having me.
Yeah, no problem. So the real, I guess, real reason why we wanted you to come on to this episode of the show is you have quite possibly like one of the most interesting ways of getting into, I mean, obviously culminating now in like catching tuna, marlin, offshore fishing, but you have one of the most interesting stories about how you got into fishing and how you have, it still blows my mind that you're a guy from the Midwest, Ohio, and you're one of like the best offshore guys that I know around here in the Northeast. So like, how did that all happen? How did it all start?
Yeah, it is amazing. I mean, I've been completely obsessed with fishing, as you know, for over 50 years now. And the people that get to know me and have seen the fish that I've caught over the years, I've been privileged to be able to catch up here, are completely blown away by the fact that I didn't grow up here and that I actually came from Ohio. So you look at this amazing obsession that I have for fishing, and you can trace the roots back to a small farm pond in Ohio when I was crazy. 3 years old with my grandmother, who, God rest her soul, I lost 45 plus years ago. Yeah. But that woman lit this passion in me that just took off and exploded, right? So my mom is the oldest of seven kids. And so when I was born, I had I have an uncle who's a year and a half older than me, and another one's 3 years older than me. So my mom would have to go to work. She'd drop me off with my grandmother. And, you know, what's a 40-year-old woman going to do with three young kids, right?
Yeah.
And she has the passion for fishing, right? So she'd drag us down to the local pond. She'd give us a bucket of worms. She'd give us the straw hats and the, you know, quintessential cane poles of bobbers. And so we would sit there and we'd catch all these bluegills. And she would walk around the pond casting the big plug. And she never caught anything. And I, you know, my little brain just couldn't understand why she would do that, right? It's like, grandma, come over here and fish with us. There's lots of fish here. There's enough to share, you know? Yeah. And so one day I was walking up to get her. And just as I was walking up, a huge largemouth bass exploded on her topwater bait. And I happened to be watching. And I was just, my mouth was open. I was screaming. The fish is jumping out of the water. She pulls this thing up on the bank. And I was like, oh my God. And right then something changed, right? It all started because then I realized it was not about catching the most fish. It was about the biggest fish, right? And it became an obsession. And I know you and I have talked about this a lot. It really became, there's like this steady progression. It's not that you're going to go from being 3 years old and catching this, you know, the biggest fish in the world. You're going to go from, I'm catching bluegills, now I got to catch that largemouth bass, right? So being in Ohio, it was the sunfish and the bluegills. Then it was like the bass. And then it was Lake Erie and all the walleye. And then we went to northern pike. Then it got to be salmon and steelhead. And it's like, it doesn't get any better out there, right? Yeah. So then, I mean, this obsession really had me and my brother Tom pick up our roots and move to come here, right? It's like, because we got introduced.
So was Tom doing it with you too? Or was it just like,
not at that point, he wasn't, no.
Because I feel like, I mean, I know like Taylor and I, he was actually the Frank out of the Frank and Tom, like back when we were growing up. It always seems like there's one sibling that definitely has it, you know, more at different phases throughout the whole story.
You know Tom pretty well.
Yeah.
I mean, I'm the one with the crazy passion about fishing, and I do the fishing part. He does the boat part and all the technical part. You know, I couldn't do what I do without him, right? But, you know, we probably started to kind of come together on fishing as he got a little older. You know, I think when we were high school, I had a painting business. Basically, put myself through college painting, and it took off, and I needed help, so I hired Tom. And it was funny because my dad used to always tell us, you know, why aren't you guys working on Saturdays? You got that much business. I'm like, because we don't want to, right? Well, Saturday mornings, he'd wake us up, and we'd be working in the backyard harder than we did, right?
Yeah.
So I looked at Tom, and I was like, dude, we're going to work half day, and we're going to buy a boat. And we bought a car top boat that we put on top of this old Oldsmobile. And we literally would go fishing the second half right from our jobs. So like nobody knew we were fishing, but it was way better than working all day, right?
Yep.
And so that kind of started it for me and Tom. And then, you know, we came up here for a family vacation and caught some bluefish in the surf, and it was like
you came to Scituate specifically?
Scituate, no. Yeah. It was the Cape. It was really the Cape we fell in love with. And, you know, my parents loved it. But my dad had been transferred out to New Jersey for 3 years, and we knew we were going back to Ohio. So it just so happened friends invited us to come, you know, for, vacation. And this experience of, like, we fished, and we didn't catch anything. And we put the rod away. We climbed up in the dunes. I'll never forget this, looking down, and all of a sudden the seagulls are going crazy. And I could see herring flying out of the water and these bluefish all over, right? Now, this is a long time ago when there's a bluefish around, right?
Yeah.
So,
and when herring were jumping around all willy-nilly on the surface, apparently. I mean, we see that now.
Now, picture this, a bunch of friggin' hillbillies from Ohio, and we see this, we scream and start running full speed down these cliffs that, you know, are really steep, go all the way down, get the rods, and we go into the surf, and my uncle's there from Ohio, and he's catching the herring with his hands because they're coming right in. I mean, the bluefish
pushed in.
Yeah. So, you know, I think we didn't know anything. We were putting them on a hook and throwing them out there, and we'd hook up, and we couldn't get over the power, right?
Oh, yeah.
And we'd lose them because it was monoliters, right? Yep. And finally, we ended up catching, like, We hooked a bunch of them. We probably caught like two or three of them. And I was like, that was it, right? Just so then it went from there to, it was time to go. Tom came to MIT for undergrad, and he and I was graduating undergrad, and I was looking for an MBA school. And so that's how I get to Northeastern, right, yep, to get my MBA. And Tom was like, hey, you got to come here. They got great schools. I mean, we can be fishing every, you know, it's unbelievable to be able to fish on the weekends, right? So long story short, we ended up all through college pretty much, we spent the weekends on the Cape, and we studied during the day, and we fished all night long. We got on the beach at dusk, and we fished till dawn.
Doesn't surprise me one bit.
And like, we used to walk so many miles. It was incredible. And, you know, back then, you know, you never even saw a schoolie striped bass, right? These were all huge fish. You got a 35 to 50 pounder or nothing.
Yeah.
You know, so that was kind of the next step. And then it was like, I'm in MBA school, you know, bored out of my mind. And I'm reading the Fisherman magazine. I keep reading about the yellowfin tuna and the white marlin south of the Vineyard. And then I think I went on a spring break trip to the Isle of Marana. I caught a sailfish, right? And then now I'm like really getting hooked on this big game stuff. Yep. And I ended up buying a rod, one rod, one squid rig, one green machine. Talked a guy into who had a brother who had a 25-foot sturry that was not a fishing boat, did not have a GPS, and it did not have a depth finder. Right? And it said, we got to go to this place called the Fingers. We figured out it was 35 miles off of Menemsha. We spent the night in Menemsha. We pointed the boat south. We ran 25 knots, and we figured we had to go an hour and something, right? We pull back. There's nobody there. Like, so we're sitting there going, oh, we gotta be lost, right? All of a sudden, three bluefins come flying, slick calm, flying out of, you know, into the air. I was so excited, I couldn't get the plastic off of the freaking green machine.
put it out with the hook protector on. Yeah. Oh, yeah.
Still got the red hook protectors on it.
So the funny part about that story is that, you know, we trolled around the whole area, and there was fish all around, and we couldn't get a bite. And we're listening to these people on the radio. Nobody's seeing a thing. Nobody's catching a thing. Right? So it gets to be later in the afternoon, and we are finally, we left because we were like, these fish aren't biting. We got to go someplace where these people are. And we went further south, didn't catch anything. And we came all the way back in the afternoon. And sure enough, there's the fish are still in that area. And we got totally depressed. Because literally I could have gaffed the white marlin, right? And I was this is how much I knew at the time, I'm throwing green machines off the top of their head.
Yeah.
You know? Casting a green machine off the bow, 5 feet away. I mean, you got to be from Ohio to do that, right? So we had the squid rig in off the rod tip with like a Penn Senator that I bought. And I gave up, gave the guy the spinning rod, and was frustrated and was walking back. And I looked back, and 100-pound tuna explodes on the
That's thing. Unbelievable.
It takes off, the line screaming. I grabbed the thing, and I couldn't believe the power, right? I'm all excited. So Tom's like, yeah, where's your gaff? Where's your gaff? Guy pulls out a hand gaff.
I love one of my – I'm gonna go a little bit of sidebar nation here, but I love everyone's, like, first – this is the first time I went tuna fishing.
Oh, yeah.
And like how poorly prepared I was. Like, so here's one of mine. This will make everyone laugh, I think. But it was on like our 23 Grady, you know, no outriggers, no nothing, similar setup. And my dad brought a buddy who had like been tuna fishing a handful of times. And he spent like, I'm not kidding you, like he had like a combination of like mackerel, like red and white Rapalas and like a Zing like umbrella rig like frame. Like he spent like, this is no exaggeration, he must have spent an hour rigging this thing. We're fishing like 12-0 senators and stuff.
Black beauties.
So he gets done with this thing and he goes, he's like, check this out. And he like holds it up and it actually looked like really good. It was like dead max is like teasers on the outside of the frame, and then it was like a red and white Rapala with like those like double fang like mustad hooks on, like the one size up than we use for bass fishing, like, yep, down the middle.
Yep.
Like a glorified bluefish umbrella. And we're like, oh, that looks great. And he just takes it and throws it over the side of the boat.
Hadn't clipped it on.
Hadn't clipped it on. Unbelievable. Yeah. I will never forget that.
That's
ever.
Pretty funny.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. It was unbelievable. Unbelievable.
It's funny that...
Two F-bombs come out there.
Oh, my I think my dad just did the good old, like... Oh, but it was... I'll never forget that.
It just reminded me when you were telling that story about going south and like, I mean, you started, when did you start going to the canyons?
Oh God. Not that long ago. 10 years ago. 10 years ago.
The first time I went, I was probably, I want to say probably like 14. That's a while ago. 17 years ago.
That is. Yeah.
Dude, no temp charts, no reports. When you'd go there, there was no, like there, if you saw another boat, it was like, you're like, yeah, it's busy out here, you know?
Yeah.
And I just remember the first time pulling into the canyons and being like, because I'd been tuna fishing for a while at that point. So like, you know, we're like, the guys look at me and they're like, where do we start? And you're like, I guess when the water hits like 70 degrees right. Yeah. And we're like way off the edge, right? And we just throw the gear in and start trolling. And it's just like triple bangers of like 50, 60 pound yellowfin. And we got there probably like in the like afternoon. So by the time it starts getting dusk, we're still miles away from the canyons, which like shows you that
yeah.
Guys should be pulling up way earlier. But, yep. You know, when the water looks good, like you should just be there. Like right. We actually didn't even know what we were looking for. Just
yeah.
Totally lucked upon this. The cockpit's fully yellowfin and we go to the, you just blast down the canyons and we're looking for like, we're looking for a place to tie up for the night. And so we start trolling along. As soon as we find some high flyers, we start trolling, bang a big eye, like at dusk. And back then, like they weren't like, it's not like it was today where yeah. you get into them.
There's been a few years there where they were like more, you know, available to catch the yellowfin.
Yeah. But this was back then. There was, if you got one in a year, you were super lucky on the, like at night. Two swordfish, a mako, get back up, more yellowfin. It was just like mayhem. And I was like, I just remember being like, I'm coming back here.
Oh, yeah.
Right. This is all I want to do for the rest of my life. Yeah, you know? Exactly. Like, this is it. But
then next time you get skunked.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. Totally. Yeah, exactly. I'm like, you guys, it's like heaven down there. You just go and you just put stuff in the water.
You know, I've told Brian this a million times. I mean, I used to do a ton of canyon fishing. It used to be like that.
Totally.
It almost was like you didn't even matter where you went. If you go to certain, as long as there was reasonable water and you got to those canyons, it was crazy. I mean, we used to average 20 or 30 yellowfins that were 60 to 90 pounds. And,
yep.
You know, we didn't see as many big eye, but when we did, they were all big.
Mm-hmm.
We saw white marlin, but we didn't see as many blues as they're out there now. But, you know, there was one point, like, I think the best we ever did on Ed Lavelle's boat was 63 yellowfin. I mean, and they were all, and we had some of them that were 100, 125 pounds that we got at night. So it's changed a lot. Yep. You know, I know you guys had Damon out here recently.
In the last episode.
I mean, he's one of the fishiest guys I know. And I had the privilege of fishing with him a bunch of times in the canyons. And I tell you, that guy can raise blue marlin like nobody's business. Because we used to be fishing with him side by side. And, you know, Ed's spread was always about maximizing yellowfin. He, like, really wasn't into the marlin as much. So we ran a lot of spreader bars and all that stuff. And I think it's just too confusing for the marlin. They don't like it. And Damon would always, like, he would have a few less lures, not as
simpler, more room to manipulate the spread for the
way
for
more
the
room. And, you know, and he got way more blue marlin.
I remember I was working Pier 1 in Green Harbor, bouncing boat to boat when Damon's, I don't want to say first started fishing, but when he like, he was in Green Harbor, he had a lures back then. And then Ed was on Pier, I think it was on Pier 2, tucked away inside, like the old.
We should probably mention Ed Lavelle.
Ed Lavelle.
Christine.
And then Andy Lavelle, another captain, you know, in the area, guys. It's just so funny to like come, everything comes like full circle. You know, like,
yep.
I knew Ed and the boat, Christine, like way back in the day. And then, you know, fast forward, Andy and I are now our friends. You know, we've been friends for a while now, but like, you know, just there was a period where like I knew the boat and then the boat disappears. They were down the Cape doing their thing. It's funny.
I should show you some pictures of our first canyon trips where that Andy came, you wouldn't believe it.
Oh, you, if
this
you got
tiny little towhead gets yeah. swallowed up in this, you know, fighting chair catching elephants and screaming at us.
I'm sure it was
hilarious. Oh,
yeah. I'm sure I'm in some of the backgrounds of some of the, like the doc pictures in yeah. Green Harbor. Very husky.
100%.
A husky little
I tell you, that was
young
husky
Dave,
lad.
Young Dave Good.
That was one of those privileges to, you know and be able to fish with Ed. And, you know, I'm still really good friends with him. But what a fishy guy. I mean, that guy absolutely had a sixth sense that other people don't.
Yeah.
About the water, especially.
Yep.
You know?
That instinct is like the one thing.
Yeah.
And I know we'll like get into this like later and, you know, mention how we all got into it and learned from people and whatever, but the instinct is like you can't teach it.
Yeah, he's you know, the thing that blew me away is I always knew that he was like that, but one year he took his boat back down to North Carolina to get painted. So I went down there with him and I helped him. You know, we had to put everything back on the boat. It took us a couple days and then we fished for like 3 days. And all the locals were going one way, and they weren't doing anything. You know, you all go to the Big Rock. We were fishing, you know, at a boat.
Yeah.
And they, you know, nobody was doing anything. And Ed broke off and just went looking. And next thing you know, he's like, I like the color of this water. And he starts working it. And next thing you know, boom, boom, boom. Like, we come into the dock, and we are, the whole fish box is loaded with wahoo, yellowfins, big mahis, yep. And everybody down there is looking at him like, who are you?
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
Where'd you come from?
Yeah. He just trusts
his instinct. He doesn't need to follow the pack all the time, you know?
Yeah, he's an amazing guy. And, you know, I really enjoyed listening to the podcast you guys did a couple, 3 weeks ago where you were talking about, you know, being on other people's boats.
Yeah.
I thought you made some really, really great points because I've done that a lot too, right? And I had a really unique relationship with Ed. Because, you know, for years and years and years before his kids got, you know, Andy got old enough, I ran the cockpit.
Yeah.
And he ran the boat, right? And when it came to putting out the spread, he and I came together and we would talk. And I was like, I'm going to do this. This is, what do you think? And he'd be like, I think that, but why don't you put this on the right long?
Yeah.
And then when it came to finding the water and stuff, you know, he'd bring out the chart. He always asked me, mm-hmm. right? It was his call, but so we had that back and forth balance that was really unique. And that's what comes, you know, after years of kind of fishing together.
It does. And you quickly figure out, like, this is might be a little bit too detailed, but like you figure out like what your contribution percentage is for different things when you're out there. Like Ed, for example, right?
Yeah.
Like you probably trusted him a lot more with like the water, where we're fishing decisions. And he put the spread decision, most of the spread decisions on you to relate to like kind of my own situation with my brother. Like my brother is, and my dad are like the Ed. And I trust them with the location and the water and the place. And like, we'll all consult each other. Don't get me wrong, but like, If I don't need to be involved in that, I don't really care. You find your place.
Yeah.
You know?
That's the best line too. Like, what do you think? You know, when you're a crew and, you know, you come together and you say, hey, this is what I'm thinking. What do you think?
Yeah.
That's like that bridge in the gap.
Yeah,
and just
it's
like,
one guy who's a captain, right? But the captain, if he's good, he's going to want input from people he trusts.
Yeah,
right?
Exactly.
And it's the same way around. It's like you run in the cockpit, and it's kind of your job. But, you know, hey, the captain's probably got some, you know, thoughts.
Yeah.
Especially when it's his boat, right? But,
yep.
I mean, it was a good deal. But, you know, I mean, to kind of bring this back to what we originally were talking about, you know, this passion just kind of like took off, right? So it went from catching that first 90-pound bluefin that we did get with the hand gaff because Tom realized that the guy had a dock
deck
pole.
Brush.
You know, like we don't even use those things. They put you know, put your lines on.
Yeah, like the little like V thing.
Yeah, he looked at the guy like Tom picks up the hand gaff and he picks up the pole and he goes, "You got duct tape?"
I'm just gonna.
He's like, "Yeah, I got duct tape. What are you gonna do with that?"
He goes, "Oh, don't worry." MIT training right there.
he duct tapes this thing together. I pull this thing up, and I'm like, "Oh my god, this is trophy fish, Tom!" Like, I'm thinking, is that gonna work? He gaffs the thing. Done.
Yeah.
Done.
Like duct tape will do.
Yeah.
Magic.
So, you know, we end up, and then the other funny part about that story was that we then super happy, like, and we're listening to all these other top boats that we recognize, and they're all belly aching. Nobody's catching anything. So we're like, guys, we have more white marlin than the surface and tuna all over the place. And then everybody's like, hey, where are you? Where are your numbers? Oh, yeah. And there's like silence. And they're like, you're out here without a Loran? Like, yeah, we don't have a Loran. And they were like,
that is unbelievable.
Then they go, what depth of water are you? And there's silence. And we're like, you don't have a depth finder. Nope. We left Menemsha. We do 27 knots and we ran for an hour and a half. Yeah. Dead south, right?
Unbelievable.
Next thing you knew, like literally five big boats come piling in on us. And we could not understand what they were doing. They come running in. They stop really fast. A guy goes running up. And it looks like he's got a brush and a bucket. Like, what are they doing washing the front of the boat? They all had live scup in the buckets.
Yeah.
Next thing you know, there's white marlin jumping all around us. And we're like pulling our hair out because, you know, it was that easy. Because there were. There's like back then, there were millions of these things.
Yeah.
But anyway, so that kind of took it to the next level,
you,
right?
That got you to like the offshore.
Offshore.
That hit you with the offshore needle. Right.
Right there. And so then it was like, okay. Then we went to giant tuna. And, you know, we got our first giant tuna. And then it was just from there, it just snowballed, right? All we want to do is giant tuna, giant tuna, giant tuna. Then I got a little bit older and it's kind of like into blue marlin, which I still am.
Yeah. You're obsessed with blue marlin.
Then I got obsessed, you know, catching swordfish. And all of a sudden, then, you know, I've done all of this. And not that I don't want to get excited with every single blue marlin or with every single giant bluefin, but it's not the same as when I got the first ones, right? But then my kids came around. And what was so cool was, you know, I had just gone through this amazing journey from farm pond to catching 800 pound plus giant tunas. And I got the excitement to be able to go back and do the whole damn progression again through my kids, right? And then Tom had kids, and being able to take them and see this excitement was really cool. And I think, you know, that's what it's really about. You know, and it really gave me a reason to kind of focus on this fish that I had forgot about. And it inspired me to go get my captain's license. Because then I was like, I learned a lot about how to take kids and how to help little kids catch big fish. And I wanted to be able to do that for other people, right?
Yeah.
And so some of my first charters, I mean, I used to laugh. These guys would come to me, you know, they'd be like 40, 45 years old, which I was probably about that age myself. And they'd have a 10-year-old, 12-year-old. And they're like, the kid absolutely loves to fish. I can't catch him anything. He's got to catch something, yeah. Right? And it really, you know, it inspired me to be able to help catch these kids their first fish and see the joy. And then a lot of them, the charter clients I had in the beginning, we went through the progression together, right? And yeah. I would eventually catch them their first tunas, you know? But, you know, it really was, I think that's the cool thing. And I think, you know, you're probably starting, you're getting towards that point in your life where your life is going to change. You too, probably, right,
yep.
Dave?
I mean, yeah, absolutely. He's got one on the way in July.
Yeah. I mean, you guys are at, you know.
Have a tuna fish by August, I'm hoping, right?
Yeah. Well, you're right. I sit there and I you know, watch Brian and some of the crazy fishing he does, and I'm like, oh my God, I can't believe he's going again doing this.
Yeah.
And but that's kind of where I was when I was this age, and you know, it's just you can't get enough, right?
No.
But your lives are all going to change when the kids come. The whole world changes,
yep.
Right? In a really, really good way. But it really does. It gives you this opportunity to start that amazing journey all over again. Right. And so, you know, there's a couple of things I jotted down as I kind of thought about some of this stuff that I just wanted to share with folks. You know, really some just advice that I put together. You know, the first thing is that you can't start them early enough. Right. So when Michael was a toddler.
How old is Michael now?
Michael is 22 now.
Gotcha.
Right? So when he was a toddler, do you remember those Murray Brothers plastic mackerel that we used to rig on spreader bars. It might even be before your time.
I remember them.
I don't think I remember.
Oh, dude, they were actually
pretty
awesome.
Realistic.
They were very realistic, like hard rubber. And like we had them, like I grew up working at Fisherman's Outfitter and we'd have them like in the back. But like by then, when I started.
Did they move or anything, or was it just like a straight plastic?
No, mackerel? They were like a straight plastic. If you actually had them right now, they'd be a ridiculous dredge bait. Like if you made a whole dredge of those, they'd be awesome, you know.
Yeah,
but yeah, but
you need one hell of an LP to pull it.
But. Absolutely,
better than the witch doctor.
Yeah,
not a lot of things better than the witch doctor. But maybe a whole dredge full of rubber mackerels. That might get it.
God, I haven't heard the witch doctor in a while.
Oh, we brought that up a couple episodes.
We got stories on witch doctors too. Don't ever bring up Ed Lavelle because. We went through a few of his.
Those went through a witch doctor phase for a while.
We lost a lot of them.
Yeah. See, we were just joking. We were like, someone fishes these and catches a bunch of fish, and it sounds like Ed
probably had 8 or 9.
No, we did. We did, but you know what? I was completely obsessed at that time with white marlin and spinning rods.
Yep.
We'd see them on the surface, and I'd be up there. I literally was constantly – I had a spinning rod with a ballyhoo with ice in a Ziploc ready to go. Like all I thought about for 2 days was trying to get a white marlin. And we would go – I'd go up to the bow, and we'd hook the white marlin, and we'd be doing these crazy circles. And I was like, boom, boom. There goes the witch doctor. You know, those things were cheap.
Oh, yeah. When you were talking about scup, cast and scup, I remember like the years when we were tuna fishing and we didn't have any bait. And we were buying pogies at, you know, $100+ a dozen.
For a dozen, yeah.
I was bringing scup back from the Cape. Every time we'd fish the canyons and come home, I'd bring like 30 scup back. And
yeah.
I got a bunch of tuna fish on them, but I did get one giant. I got a 78 incher on a scup. Sick. So
yeah.
Pretty funny, but
that was good.
I was pulling the cage out. I like, you know, fall comes around, we're not fishing a lot, and I like just forgot that I had all these scup in there, and I come back in like November when we're going to pull the boat, and I was like, oh shit, the cage still full of scup. There was like a couple of dinosaurs in there that had cannibalized.
It's like Secret of the Ooze. They're like mutants in there.
They had like hunchbacks. They were a new species.
Oh, that's awesome.
I killed them. I couldn't trust them.
Well, we kind of got off the point of the Murray Brothers rubber mackerel, right?
Oh, yeah. Back to mackerel.
That's what happens, though.
So the point I was trying to make was that you can't start the kids early enough. So Michael couldn't even walk, and I would take one of these rubber mackerel, and they'd rig up a rod, and they'd hook it onto the nose of that mackerel, and then take it to the far end of the house, and I would hold him in my lap, and I would teach him pump up, reel down, pump up, reel
That's
down.
Amazing.
He loved it, right? And to this day, I have a video that in my friends, you know, Ed and Stan tease me about this all the time because. We used to go to Venezuela back before all the problems with their government, and God, it was blue marlin fishing like you can't imagine. You know, we averaged 3 a day. And I was up in the tower. So this must have been 1998. That's how far back it was. And Michael was 1 year old, and I had been in this phase of pump up, reel down. And Andy Lavelle, who was probably maybe 16 at the time, was fighting probably 300-pound blue marlin, and it was kicking his butt, right? And
yep.
I was like, okay, Andy, this is instructional video for Michael. You need to use really good form. Now, pump up, reel down. And I'm talking to Michael saying, pump up, reel down, pump up, reel down. So everybody teases me about that still. But, you know, so the first thing is like to kind of plant that seed early. But the next thing to really think about is that, you know, like many things in life, you only get one first impression.
Yeah. Right?
It's really important when you take kids that the first experience is really good. So if you blow it and you take them on a day when it's really cold and they don't catch anything, they remember that, right? That sinks in. That's what fishing is, right? So I would stress with folks, and for my kids, when it was taking them the first times, man, you have to absolutely make sure that the weather is right, and you got to make sure that they're going to catch fish,
mm-hmm.
right? You want to go to a pond that is chock full of sunfish and bluegills because they don't care about catching big fish when they're that age, right?
They just want to catch fish.
All they want to do is catch, you know, and you want to kind of get them excited. You want to help them, you know, and that's really, I think that next step is really focused around, it should be at the ponds. And you want to start with the bluegills and the bass, or bluegills and the sunfish, and you want to explain to the kids what's going on with hook and the worm, the bobber. Watch the bobber go down, show them when the like get it tight and set the hooks, and then slowly pull up and keep it tight. Those basic principles that, you know, that's where they learn that, right? Mm-hmm. And they're going to sit there and watch you, and then you hand the rod off, and before you know it, they want to do it themselves, and then you can let them do it, you know. And then it's going to progress, right? And so from there, probably you want to go to ponds, and there's plenty of ponds around here that are just completely chock full of largemouth bass. That, you know, if you go get a big bucket of shiners, you know, you're going to catch fish, right? And, you know, from there, some of the ponds here, we are really blessed in the state of Massachusetts. The stocking program they have for trout is unbelievable. And it's, a lot of people don't get that because the saltwater fishing is so good. But, you know, I fished this entire winter down at Little Pond, mm-hmm. and I can't tell you the amazing trout. I've been catching 20 to 22-inch brown trout all winter long, which is amazing.
It's
right?
incredible.
It's incredible. And there have been nights when I went down there, you know, it's like right at dusk, it goes slick calm. And, you know, maybe I fished 2 hours and I've only caught two or three fish. And all of a sudden, like a hatch happens or something, and the entire pond is full of rising fish. And this is like in the middle of the winter. Like, so those are all holdover fish. So that's how many fish that the state puts into these ponds, which it's really pretty amazing. But, you know, once you've kind of got to that point, you know, it's another level for the kids because it's a little bit more patience, but you know, you get to catch these trout, which are beautiful fish, and they usually, you know, really like seeing that. It's not so boring or, in between.
It's definitely the next phase from
it's
the sunfish,
kind of
bluegill
phase,
stuff. They're bigger, they're prettier, they fight harder, same principles. It's
and you're big into photography, super critical to, like, take pictures of the kids that you can blow up and they can show people because, again, it just gets the passion going with them. But from there, it's really then time, you know, kind of graduate to the boat, right? And, you know, without a doubt, the first step with taking kids in a boat fishing is mackerel.
Right? Yeah.
They absolutely love it, right?
Because it's bait in general, like anything like that.
It's just got to be constant, right? Yeah. So you don't take them until your buddies are all saying, oh my God, like you can walk on the mackerel at the SA buoy or whatever, right?
Yep.
You know,
I still love mackerel fishing.
We've had a couple of days we'll go out and have a blast.
Fishing.
Yeah.
It's hysterical. We always used to have the kicker. That was the guy that kicked them into we had a in-deck like live wall on one of the boats that we fished on. So I always love being the kicker. And that's another good example. Like, they don't always have to be like holding the rod either, as long as they're involved in the whole process.
Yeah, you know? Exactly. But without a doubt.
Kicking them into the well, putting them in the cooler.
You know, and when you've got the kids and it's so important that you keep the activity going, bring chum. I mean, the damn mackerel will follow you constantly, you know?
Yeah.
The one thing to watch with the mackerel fishing is sabiki rigs.
Little hooks.
Yeah.
Man, there's nothing worse than getting them in the kick, right? So got to teach them about that. Maybe even worth thinking about crimping, you know, the barbs.
Or even like cut them in half, you know, just using like three droppers and making it a little easier to manage. And it's easier on you. I mean, they don't necessarily get the whole, you know.
Yeah, we're filling a 125-quart cooler.
Exactly, you know? Exactly. So,
and also just using like the old school Christmas trees as opposed to the, you know, those hooks are a lot more forgiving.
Yeah.
You know.
Easier to see.
Yeah. I would say from there, the next step is probably like, I wasn't doing this when my kids were young, but the Buzzards Bay Black Sea Bass Bite. Oh,
such a
blast. You've heard me talk about it. No,
I still haven't done that. I freaking love that.
And to this day, Tom and I take our small boat once or twice a year, and we bring our daughters. And they absolutely love it. And they They catch more than their limit.
What's that whole fishery like? Just to compare, I mean, you fished a lot of different places, but to compare that to another like similar inshore fishery, what would you compare it to? Like sheep's head, like snook, that type of thing?
No.
Triggerfish down in North Carolina. It's like similar to that. It's like,
I don't think I've ever seen anything like this.
Yeah.
The closest thing would be, I'm sure, in Florida, in some areas where they get small groupers.
Yeah.
Because this is the only fish that's in our waters that's in the grouper family.
Yeah.
And believe me, we love to eat them. You know, I'm into cooking and stuff. They're fantastic to eat.
Yeah.
And then in between, there's all these scup, right? So it's literally nonstop. You know, you're...
Good action.
We drop those little Luganus rigs from...
Shimano.
Shimano. And yeah. We tip them with like a tentacle from the squid. And it is just lights out. All day long. I mean, it's just so, like I said, my daughter, who's really not into fishing as much, loves it because it's, you know, nonstop action. So after, you know, stuff like that, you really start to, you enter kind of that next phase of the striped bass and bluefish. And I call it really like the next phase because that's the first time when you start going where there might be a period where you're not going to catch anything, right? You might go an hour or two without catching something. And for a kid, that like seems like forever, right?
And you're also, with young kids, you know, trying to balance the time of day, not want to get them up too early. It might not be prime time in the tide. You know, you have a little bit of waiting to do, those sorts of things.
And I tell you, I learned this through all the, when I started chartering, you know, I took a lot of people, a lot of guys with the young kids. And, you know, one of the things I learned pretty quickly is that a lot of the gear we use to catch striped bass and bluefish, you know, if you're like wire line trolling or jigging or all that stuff, the kids, when they've got a bluefish or a striped bass on it, they can't hold the reel from side to side.
It's not kid friendly.
It turns, right? So, you know, like when we used
that's a really good point.
When we mackerel fished, I used to put out a balloon with a mackerel, and I think this is a great like transition into that phase. Put a mackerel with the treble hook now, and next year you're gonna have to put a circle hook in it. But way back, away from the kids doing their mackerel thing, right? And I bought one of those little Shimano Torium 16 with the little Travala rod.
Yeah,
really, really super lightweight with braid on it, and you know. Out there 3 hours, doesn't get a bite. Nobody notices. The kids are all catching things. All of a sudden, the clickers, I got it up in a rocket launcher, start screaming, give it to Michael. And he can handle the weight of that rod, right? He catches a 41-inch, 27-pound fish, right? It, like, lit the fire for him with striped bass.
Oh, yeah.
Right? But then I started taking kids, you know, in charters. And, you know, we would run over the race and we jig wire line, or if you did a half day thing, you'd be like trolling wire line with umbrella rigs, looking for a couple of bluefish or whatever. And it was really clear. These young kids cannot hold the gear from turning side to side. So I was like, hey, I'm one of the few people in the world that still uses a fighting chair for bluefin tunas, right?
Yeah.
So I flipped the gimbal up on the chair, jacked the foot stand way up, right, and tighten it down because the kids don't weigh that much.
Yeah.
It doesn't even have to be in one of the,
yeah, you know,
and they can push off of it, and the gimbal holds it from going to side to side.
Yep.
And so, like, I mean, one of my first charters, the guy said to me, look, I just need him to catch something. And, you know, I'm not, chartering wasn't my business. It was more of a passion. So I like, look, I'm going to tell you the truth. The whole fleet went over to Race Point. Nobody caught it yesterday. Like one 30-inch striped bass, one bluefish. I don't think we really want to go. It's like, I just want to catch, just bend the rod, catch something. I said, well, when I'm tuna fishing, like off of Peaked Hill in the deeper water, I've been catching all kinds of big bluefish. He's like, that would be perfect. So we run across, and a southwest wind was blowing a little more than I thought. So I tucked up along the beach to get a windbreak before it went out. And we got away from the fleet and kept going down the backside. And all of a sudden I see a couple of turns like right in the wash dipping. And I said to Andy Lavelle, who was my mate at the time, I said, Andy, put out one of the rods. Just put a, you know, wire line with the jig out. So he did. And he started jigging it. We went like 10 feet, boom. The rod triples over and the line is literally dumping. And I was like, oh my God. And this guy can't believe this, right? So he put his kid in his chair, put the rod in the gimbal, and he was doing great. And I'm like watching all of the white line disappear. So I was like, okay, we're backing down. So like, I literally backed down on this fish. And I learned that I could fight the fish kind of with the boat.
Yeah.
He catches a 41-inch fat as could be striped bass. Like the guy, like, I thought he was going to kiss me on the lips.
Yeah, never mind being a kid, like for an adult coming up here, that's like
this guy a fish was of like a lifetime. Hugging me saying, you know, we don't catch another fish, you've made our, this has been awesome, I can't thank you enough. For like, hey, put the lines back out, man.
Yeah.
Like, we end up getting 12 more fish, right? And so it was really, really neat to see a young kid being able to handle it because of the fighting chair, right?
Yeah.
Plus, I think there's something cool for kids about, you know,
yeah, they all, the chair. I mean, you hope that they all watch Jaws and everything like that, you know?
Like moment when he clips in.
Oh, and, yeah.
You know, before the line starts screaming out, that is,
it's epic.
Like ubiquitous.
I still think about that when we hook up.
Oh, but here's another thing that, you know, I was.
That's why I love the chair.
You know, I realized when taking the young kids, those periods in between when the tide's not right or whatever, and you go even an hour or two, an hour for a young kid without a bite is like eternity, right? So believe it or not, this is back in the day when, you know, we had VHS tapes. So I bought one of those TVs at BJ's.
Like the combo, the VHS combo.
VHS combo. Yeah. And so one day we're going and it's like 2 hours and nothing. I haven't caught a fish. And I was like, starting to feel a little pressure and everything. And I'm like looking at these young kids. I'm like, you guys like the movie Shrek? And they're like, everybody liked Shrek at that time, right?
It's unreal.
So I go downstairs.
It's a great movie.
I pull up the TV and I had a cigarette lighter rigged up, hooked it in there, swiveled the passenger seat, put it on there. I got three kids all staring at Shrek, loving it, right? Hour later, rod triples over, right? And they're all like ecstatic. And then so we catch a couple fish and then it dries up again. And same thing. I'm starting to feel like, oh God, the pressure's on. They're getting bored. And they're like, you guys like boat snacks? And they're like, boat snacks? What are boat snacks? I used to go to BJ's and get this giant plastic bag, right? And I filled it with all kinds of candy. And those Charms Blow Pops were the absolute favorite. Like, I had this thing jam-packed, and I'd come up and go, okay, you each get one or two. It was like Halloween, right? I remember this one guy goes, man, you really got this thing dialed in. So I got kids, man.
Oh, yeah.
So, I mean, you know, clearly, you know, some things to think about there, you know, with the kids. But, you know, the other thing that you got to remember is catching a bluefish, I mean, what do we do when bluefish eats one of our squid rigs right now? Right?
I mean, yeah,
we get literally swear up and down, hate the damn things, right?
Yep.
For a kid, that's a complete trophy.
That's a trophy.
Trophy.
Yep.
Right? And I'm going to tell this one a little out of sequence, but I will never forget this as long as I live. One day I took my daughter out and we were trolling and bluefish hit, right? I think we were trolling for tuna and a bluefish hit. Maybe a bunch of them hit. And I was like, doggone it. You know, things are chewing up my expensive squid rigs. And I decided, like, one of them hooked up. I said, like, put her in the chair and let her practice, right? So she's reeling the thing in, pulls it in the boat, and I'm like, okay. Take a quick picture, toss it over. And I turn around and I got the pouty face going. I'm like, hun, what's wrong? And she wouldn't talk to me. And she was like completely really upset. And I could not for the life of me understand.
You didn't take a picture.
And she said, in the video when Michael caught his first tuna, you were yelling and screaming and high-fiving and slapping him on the back. And you didn't for me. And I was like, oh my God. Boy, did I screw up on that, right?
Yeah.
It's like...
You wouldn't think about it, but...
It's not for us.
Yeah.
It's not... catching a bluefish is not... It's a trophy for the kid, right? You got to make sure that they, you know, that they feel that, you know, that's a trophy.
It's a hard thing to remember. That's definitely one of the most important things.
Yeah.
That it's special. You know, it's special to someone else. Like, we take it for granted that we catch these, like, amazing fish, you know, bluefin tuna and, you know, like, large game fish.
Yep.
But, like, those little flounders and like you said, mackerel and schoolies, like that stuff.
You just got to make sure that, again, it keeps coming back to this progression.
Right? Yeah.
Once they're ready. So my kids, you know, once it came time where they caught the striped bass and the bluefish, it's kind of like we were starting to get, but I told Brian this the other day, that there came a point where I think I was actually pushing my son too much, right? And that's a honest thing, you know, you can screw up by pushing him too much. And I don't know, he was probably between 6 and 8 years old. Him and his buddies were into these Pokemon cards and it used to drive me crazy. And so,
you guys want to see my collection?
Were you a Poke? You were, no way.
Pogs. Yeah. Yeah. If, you know what? We'll get into that later. We'll talk about Pog collections later.
I'm just talking about this unbelievable passion for fishing and everything I've done. And now I've brought my kid all the way at this point. And at 6 years old, I got like, he'd rather go do Pokemon than go fishing with me.
Yeah.
I mean, it was devastating, right? So I just stopped taking
it. It is something that I feel like and I'm not a parent yet, but it's something you kind of have to be ready for if you're trying to get them. I was like that. I was that kid, to be 100% honest. Like at that like 8 to like 11, 12 year old age, like if it wasn't not instant gratification, but like I got bored of it quick and I was interested in other things. And I think similar to you, my dad was pretty in tune with it and was just like, you know, do whatever you want, go play lacrosse, do whatever you want to do. And
I'm glad doing that.
Yeah. I'm
more than me,
but I'm glad he did it.
No, absolutely. You know?
Cause then it's your choice when you come back.
Yeah. Because then, you know, I just went off and started fishing again. Right. I keep coming with all these tuna and, Michael was like, why won't you take me? Why won't you take me? I'm like, you're not even 8 years old. So we started going out and I was trying to focus on not just fishing, but using the boat for family, right? So my wife, Susan, and I would take the two kids out and they get bored, right? So it really started like, this was back in probably the 2005 time frame, I'm going to say. We were just starting a wave of small tuna coming in, like, and it was that class that just grew, the 2003 year class. And so I remember one day we were out front of Scituate and kids were bored. So I had bought a whole set of 50 wides on chair rods that I had custom built that had nice soft tips, of perfect for kids.
Yeah.
Right. We put like 100-pound Mamoy Diamond Blue on there, and we trolled them for squid rig, right? And then Tom and I used to catch 150, 200-pound fish on them, and we'd love it, right? It was fun. And I thought, you know, I just one day, Michael's just really bored, I could tell. And I was like, Michael, you want to try the old bucket trick? He's like, what's the bucket trick? I go, this is what we do to guys when we're on canyon trips that go to sleep. And I explain how we, you know, they're sleeping, and we hook the bucket on, we sink it way back, and then we put the drag up and the clicker on, and it, you know, starts screaming, and we give them the rod, and they fight the thing all the way in. So I said, we're going to do it, but you know there's the bucket, but it'd be good experience for you, right? So got to teach him, you know, let it go way back, had my wife put the boat in gear, and then had him work on his technique in fighting the bucket. And it became like a game, and he loved it. And he was a big kid to start with, for 8 years old. And I was like, man, you know, and Kelly even wanted to do it, right? And so we did it a few times and I was like, you know, I think next year you're going to be ready. And then I kept hearing about all these 30, 40 pound fish, which we'd never seen them that small, but they were just, it was just this year that these fish were all over. And I said something to Tom about, you know, maybe we should try it. And we both agreed we would. We planned it three times and had to abort every time, going back to my rules about, you know, the weather's got to be right. You're looking for high pressure. You want blue skies, right? And even the day that we finally made it out in September, We got down there and it was blowing too much. So took them all to Dunkin' Donuts, made him happy with all the, you know, munchkins and all that stuff. Came back like off the docks at 11 a.m., you know, perfect for tuna fishing, right? So we start heading out and we start going through some rollers that were clearly dying, but they were pretty good rollers. And, you know, you go over the, I'm looking at Tom and Tom's looking at me. It's like, and we're both shaking our heads going, we can't do this. We had to turn around and we go over another one and they're like, all of them are screaming and yelling. They loved it. They thought it was like a roller coaster, right? So he's like, let's go a little further, right? So we went and we got it laid out a little bit and it got better and we get out there. And, you know, one of the first things, Michael was a little nervous about what if it's too big for him. I kept saying, don't worry, they're all small fish. If it's big fish, I'll take it, right? So I really didn't expect it because it was so late. But, you know, when it's sunny and blue skies and late, we pulled. Back then, we used to use ballyhoo and no one else did.
Yeah, yeah, I remember
And I
that.
Pulled a ballyhoo out and put, because that's where we get bit at in the middle of the day. And sure enough, half an hour in, freaking right rigger comes down and it is screaming. And I'm like, Michael, get in a chair. You know, I'm trying to like make this a big deal too, right?
Yeah.
So I get him in the chair and I've got the harness all rigged up so that he can only go so far. And that's something really important for kids. You got to focus on that safety so that they feel comfortable. They know it.
We call that the oh shit line up in PEI.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's kind of the same thing. PEI, you need an adult oh shit line.
Yeah, exactly.
Right? And Tom's screaming and yelling, it's a bigger fish. I'm like, no, it's not. I'm like, come. I see the look in Michael's eye. I'm like, don't worry, Michael, it's only 30, 40 pounder. It's just a long run, right? So then he starts getting in his rhythm and he's doing it and he's doing pretty good. And, you know, we got thing halfway in, all of a sudden thing turns and does another and dumps the reel. Tom's like, it's a bigger fish. I'm like, will you stop it with the bigger fish? And so he starts getting tired out. And I have a whole video of this, which is hilarious. I'm pouring Gatorade down his throat, right?
He loves it.
And so Tom's like, I'm like looking at him going forward with the boat. So he goes forward with the boat and I'm telling Michael to just brace with his feet in the chair. And it's all strapped in there, right? So the rod's tripled over. He's going forward. Just shake your hands out. So he's doing this.
I've seen that video.
Shaking his hands out. And so we leader the fish up. We get it. It's 85 pounds. And he's 72. And I went crazy, right? Yelling and screaming, slapping him five, all this kind of stuff, which is what my daughter ended up remembering, right? So then probably about, I don't know, an hour later, rod goes off again. And Tom's son, John, gets in the chair, and he catches one too. And on the way in, his daughter was really disappointed because she didn't get a chance. And she was falling asleep, and the whole way I'm looking. I knew those small fish were out there someplace, and sure enough, I see a bunch of them, start yelling and screaming. I throw a ballyhoo out back, one pass, 30-pounder grabs it. She's fighting it and put his little son in there. We have both of them in the fighting chair,
so they
caught it, which, you know, it's a day that they'll never forget, we'll never forget, you know? And, you know, so then I like to tell the story about my daughter's first fish because she was 8 as well. And the funny part here was that she really wanted a dog. No kid loves dogs more than Kelly, bar none, period, right?
Yeah.
And I love dogs too. And you know that I've got two of them now. And it's.
We got one upstairs barking at us right now.
Nothing better than dogs in my book. But, you know, my wife Susan and I both travel a lot. And both of our, you know, my parents are in Ohio, her parents were in Nebraska. It made it really challenging to have a dog. It came to a point where we both agreed, okay, it's time for the dog. And so I told Kelly, I tell you what, you can have a dog when you catch your first tuna. Well, wouldn't you know, like, this is a kid you can't get out of bed before
she's
eight,
she's
right?
Rigging she's, leaders she's at 2:30 in the morning.
She is freaking up, set her own alarm. She's waiting for us, like, to go out. And we did. We went out in the dark.
Yeah.
And, you know, she's like so excited thinking that like this is going to happen right off the get-go. She brings my brother Rick's daughter, Nikki, with her. Like, you know, they're all excited about this. And, you know, we get there and there's freaking whales all over the place. We put the rig. We go like 10 yards and a rod goes off. I'm just shaking my head going, you have to be kidding me, right? And so same thing. We've got the, you know, those shit line on there to save them. And the two of them are fighting this thing. And that's where I wrote the article on the Water magazine. They put the life-size picture of her because her face in the fighting chair is lit up because she is not thinking I'm catching a tuna. She's thinking I am getting a dog.
Oh, it's unbelievable.
Yeah, unbelievable. It really was.
I think that's such a special thing too. I mean, Brian, like we don't have kids, Brian, but like just like the ability to like share something that you like that we love with other people. You know, we definitely catch a lot of flack for maybe giving a little much of like some of the secrets and things that we've learned and like giving them away, like, you know, pretty openly. But, you know, knowing that someone went out there and like caught their first fish and or caught like a trophy fish for themselves is like such a special thing. You know, it's like something that you can't replicate it in any other way. It's such a fun
thing. Not at all. I mean, like what you give away, you're going to get that feeling. And then, like we mentioned before, you're probably going to catch more fish yourself.
Yeah.
Like, if you have someone on your team that, you know, is appreciative of what you've told them and given them, you know, it's just going to help you in the long run.
Yeah. We were just talking about this the other day, but like you guys were saying that someone that you gave some tips to at the beginning of the season, a newbie into the game, returned the favor tenfold. You know what I mean? It's like, it's unbelievable.
So we have talked through like, you know, what gets us going, getting people, you know, into fishing and passionate about it. What are some of like the lessons learned and just kind of your list of things, your go-to things for getting kids or anyone new into fishing really?
Well, I'm going to focus on kids because it's a little different with other people, but you know, probably the first thing is really just the excitement you want to build around fishing. And it really comes through the pre-trip planning, right? Yep. So you want to get them really excited and talk about what we're going to do. And I like to do that the day or day before, you know, really talk to them about what the game plan is going to be, you know, what locations we might want to fish, talk about the weather, the tides, all the things that might be a little bit over the head, but they're kind of getting excited.
It's painting the picture.
It's painting the picture. And it also like, it's a little bit set into their head, you know, over time. Talk about some of the methods that we're going to use. It's just really important because if you keep doing that, you know, they get excited about it. I think the second thing is, and I mentioned this a little bit before, is just comfort. I mean, I cannot stress enough with kids how important it is to get the right days and don't go if it's not the right days. And everybody, you know, thinks they're going to push through this. Like we push through it when we want to go. With kids, you don't do that, right? If it's raining, you don't go. If it's really cold, you don't go. If it's really windy, you don't go. You're looking for high pressure, blue skies, and a really nice day that they're going to have a good experience in the beginning. Because as I said before, you get one shot to make that first impression. And if they get the impression that fishing is bad, you're going to be fighting that your whole life, and it just won't happen. You know, the thing that, you know, this one's probably the one that my wife kind of helped me with and beat into my head is like, you guys will find this out soon enough. you got to think about the kids in their clothing to make sure they don't get cold and don't make sure they don't get hot, right? So you got to come in layers. The other thing is like bring in the sunscreen. I mean, it seems like a little thing. I am super big on putting the sunscreen on before
you are. You get on me.
Like, leave the house. Put it on before you leave the house, right?
A base coat before you leave the house.
Yeah.
Simple.
And because you know what? The second we get out there and we get focused and we got all our minds thinking about the spread and this and that, you forget about it, right?
Oh, yeah.
And then when the kids sunburnt, not only is they miserable, when you get home, you got an ass whooping coming. Right. Your wife is not going to be
happy. Your kid's a lobster. It's not a good look for
No, it is absolutely not a good look. So, you know, I always try to make sure they have a hat, they have sunglasses so they don't get headaches, all that stuff. You know, make sure they have a rain jacket in case it rains and they don't get wet. You know, funny thing, when we go out and we're going early, the kids a lot of times they're tired, right? And they're sleepy. So I'd bring, and again, this is probably my wife helping me with, I'd be walking out the door. She doesn't get up for 4 a.m. for anything, right? But yeah. If I was taking Michael tuna fishing, she'd be up and she'd be making sure and handing me the pillow and, you know, some kind of throw to throw over him. And, you know, it's really funny because I had all these videos of Michael catching all these tuna when he was younger. And I'd show all my friends and all my family back in Ohio. And, you know, they'd all be like, why does Michael look like he's completely asleep every time he's in the fighting chair? I'm like, because 30 seconds before that, he was.
I just woke him up.
Yeah. But, I mean, it makes a big, big difference for the kids if they, you know, aren't super tired. And so, you know, thinking about bringing that kind of stuff. The other thing is just safety, right? You got to understand, especially when they're young, they have a fear of the ocean. Yeah. Right. You have to help them get over that. Right. So it really does come into talking about the, you know, safety requirements, making sure that they know that we have everything covered. We're thinking about that stuff. I like to point out that we have a raft, that we have these flares, right? And make sure, almost like doing the safety drill you do the with
safety
the charter.
For a charter, right? Every morning. Yeah. Same thing.
It's the same thing. You know, one of the things that, you know, a lot of us probably take for granted is like, you know, a lot of times we don't wear, you know, life jacket and stuff. When you got kids, you can't not wear the life jacket and expect them to wear the life jacket, right? Yeah. So Tom and I bought these, they're suspenders with the CO2. Yeah. They're really light. You don't even know they're
like
on.
Like the Mustang, like self-deploying exactly. ones.
Exactly.
Yeah.
It's exact ones we have, the Mustangs. Yep. And, you know, it actually got to the point where we wear them on intensity and in the canyons when it's foggy mm-hmm. or at night and somebody's got to go up to the front of the bow. Always wear it.
Yep.
Right? And I think it's just smart.
That's such
but it,
a good point.
You know, it really,
another episode.
It's just really, really important to help the kids get comfortable with that, right? So that fear doesn't overshadow things. And then I think the last thing that for me is just super, super important is that, you know, we are all extremely intense when it comes to this passion, right?
Yeah.
You know, you and I have fished together a bunch of times. And there's a lot of yelling and screaming going on, man.
It's love yelling
yeah.
and screaming.
Yeah, it's just like what it's adrenaline, yeah. like, over
it's why
us,
we
right?
do it. It's, yeah. it's we're at and you that know what? Pinnacle. That's why.
In every case, you know, that's really good, but you have to get it in check. When you're dealing with kids, it's that much more important because they don't understand the intensity level, right?
Yeah.
You know, and my boat's name is Intensity for a reason, right?
Yeah.
It gets really intense when you're backing down an 800 pounder, right?
Yeah.
I'm going to tell the story because I think it really highlights this. A number of years ago, we were having this terrific small tuna bite. And we had a couple days back-to-back where we trolled 21 and then 22 tuna off Stellwagen. You know, the fish were all like 75 to maybe 150 pounds. And it was an absolute complete blast. And one of my friends, who hadn't been doing as much tuna fishing at the time, invited me to come with him and said, hey, my kids are coming. Will you come with me and help us? And I was like, absolutely. So brought a bunch of my stuff, got on the boat, and we took off. And let me tell you something. We hit the western edge of the bank, and you did not need your GPS to know you were at the western edge of the bank.
I love that stuff.
It was,
you know, you're there.
Literally wall to wall sheer waters. There were minkies everywhere. The humpbacks blowing. It's like right at crack of dawn. I'm like, oh my god. I was like, be careful putting them out.
You
right?
troll up onto the edge, and it's insta bite.
Yeah, insta bite. And so we probably caught, I don't know, 4 or 5 fish, like boom, boom, boom. And so we're looking, it's like, hey, let's let the kids try, right? We don't need anymore. Let's let the kids try. So my friend's 14-year-old daughter was along and she jumped in and she caught a fish and she was really, really excited about it. So then it was his son's turn. The son was probably, you know, 12, I'm going to guess. Big kid, strong kid. had gone on the boat a lot, right? But never caught tuna before. And we kept yelling to him, it's his turn, it's his turn. And he said, I don't want to. And he went in the salon and he hid. So we start going a little bit, get another fish. We fight, call for him. He won't come, catch a fish. We're like, what's going on? Why will he not do this, right? And I was like, you don't have opportunities like this very often, yeah. right? Especially with a kid on board.
Yeah.
So I told the guys, look, I'm going to go down and talk to him. So I went down and I was like, what, can you help me understand what's wrong? And I said, look, this doesn't happen very often. And it's really, really important. We really want you to catch your first tuna. Why won't you do this? And he told me that, you know, in a previous trip, they were out shark fishing and they yelled at him because he lost a shark, a blue shark. And he was petrified over this.
Yeah.
He did not want to try to catch a tuna in this mad dog bite that, you know, we really had 6-7 fish. We didn't even need another one. We just wanted him to catch a fish. And he would not come out of the salon because he thought everybody was going to yell at him.
PTSD over...
Absolutely.
Intense situation.
So I told him, I said, I'm going to go upstairs. I'm going to talk to the crew and I'll be back. So I went up and I explained to everybody what was going down. And I said, I want your promise and your promise that you're not going to say a word and I'm going to get him to come out here. And so they both were like, absolutely, we won't say a word. So I went back down, told them, look, everybody wants you to do this in the worst way. We don't think that this is a really unique opportunity. We want you to try this. And I guarantee you that nobody is going to yell at you. And so he finally came out. We go off, put the lines back in, boom, off we go. And we hook this kid up, and he's doing an awesome job. And my friend is backing the boat down, looking down at him, and he was so pumped up. He was fist pumping the air and screaming, that's my boy, that's my boy.
That's amazing.
And it was like, it was guttural. He was, he had such
emotion. I'm like choked up thinking about it right now. It
was such a moment for me.
Yeah.
And it was so awesome. And it almost didn't happen because this kid had PTSD. And he went on to catch two more fish that day.
That's awesome.
Absolutely. We ended up with 18 fish and broke the outrigger and put 18 red flags along the top. So, I mean, it was awesome. One of those kind of really great days. But, man, that moment just helped me to understand the importance of leaving the intensity at the dock. And you know what? I am as guilty as anybody of it. And
the especially thing- – especially once you get to like that level that we're talking about with our canyon stories and that sort of thing. It's like,
well, you know,
it comes with the more you do it, the more intense you get about it.
We push ourselves because we know it can go wrong. We don't ever want anything to go wrong. We want perfection, but it's with the kids. You can't do that. Right. And I struggle to this day. I wasn't that way with charters. I was really tough on Michael, my son.
Yeah.
And I still am tougher than I should be. And it's like, I don't know why that is. You know, it bothers me, right? You know, yeah. I wish if I was going to do a redo, I'd be like, I wouldn't be as hard on him. And I always wanted him to kind of really pick up on the details and like focus on these things. And it bothered me a little bit when he didn't. So I try to make a point of it. But, you know, I'd be really interested to hear from you, Brian, because, you know, you, it's a totally different situation, right? You grew up under the tutelage of one of the top tuna guys around.
Yeah.
You know, what was Greg like? I mean, was he tough on you? Was he like pushing you and Taylor? Because, I mean, you guys obviously turned out perfect when it comes to fishing.
Yeah.
But, I mean, what was it like? Can you remember backing up to those early, early days and what he was like? Was he pushing you or what?
Yeah, I mean, it was, it's very kind words, but I wouldn't say like perfect, but... His approach was very similar, but he definitely.
You're hesitating because you know he's going to hear this.
Yeah, exactly. No, I honestly couldn't ask for a better introduction to fishing from my dad. And to give a little bit of background, I mean, you know, he's just like you. He, you know, grew up fishing and same kind of progression and a little bit different because he grew up on the South Shore and grew up on the water. And he was a river rat like we were when we were kids and striped bass fishing and, you know, taking Sears game fishermen from the North River across to P-Town, running out of fuel and having his dad pick him up in the dump trucks and screaming at him on the way home, coming from P-Town and back to Marshfield, loading the boats to the back of the dump. I mean, he has so many stories. He has so much experience, but he didn't push it on us ever. It was just very organic. We were very fortunate that, you know, our grandparents had that house in Florida and stuff. So like we did the pond stuff and all that sort of thing, but Taylor and I and my dad and our whole family getting into it, it kind of began there because we were like dock fishing and catching snook and like just hanging out the whole day, just pinning shrimp on a hook and catching random things and learning those basics that you were talking about. He's an intense guy, but it's kind of weird. He's almost like he's intense with his peers and takes things seriously, but also jokes around, has the most amazing sense of humor, and he's super dialed in, has the craziest instincts that you could ever imagine. But then like he has this side of him that is very like soft almost. Like he's able to read a situation and figure it out and not get like overwhelmed with it, I guess. So believe it or not, I can't remember a time fishing related in my life where like he got overly intense. It was like, he was just very, you know, just kind of very like casual about it. Not casual, very passionate, but like, you know, you lose a fish, you lose a fish. You know, if we don't go, we don't go, or, you know, whatever else.
He has just an amazing way of making a short statement that is right on.
100%.
Right? It's like
he is and I know,
and he sums the whole situation up immediately, right?
Exactly.
Like, so I remember
usually with a laugh.
And this goes back probably to what, 2013. I bought Michael the Hydrosport, right? 18-foot Hydrosport. And I had it in the slip right next to Intensity for like a week. And he comes down, and we had just got the thing, and I had taken him out probably 3-4 times. I think you might have come with us once before, right?
Yep.
And I had been letting him drive and stuff, but only with us, and he wanted to take his friends out. And I was really hesitant, and Susan was like, you know, you got to let go at some point. And I was like, okay. So I let him go. The wind starts coming up. Now it was southwest, so it was, you know, I knew it was going to be calm. And I'm like going up and down the dock. And your dad just walks down the dock, and he just like sums up the situation. Yeah. Like, I didn't even talk to him about it. He just looks at me and goes, relax.
Yeah.
They'll come back.
Yeah.
And then he told me some story about you taking a, you know, small boat like 30 miles off to catch a shark, and like you ran out of something. You know? Yeah.
That's him. I mean, that's just his approach. I mean, he's an intense guy. He's really good at what he does. He is not trying to like describe him too much to answer your question, but I feel like in answering your question, I have to describe him.
Yeah.
He's the perfect charter captain. He is so aware of situations. Like, he knows when he can joke. He knows when he can tell a dirty joke. He knows when he, you know, needs...
Which is always.
He knows when he needs to cater towards the kid. He knows when he has, you know, a passionate female or someone on the boat that like really is really super into this and wants to know every aspect of the fishery. He's really good at being able to triage like every single situation. And he's done that with Taylor and I growing up. Like I've alluded to before and mentioned, like, I'm not the most patient person. I wasn't, especially when I was a kid. So I did have a significant like time period where, like to your Pokemon story, I really didn't want much to do with it unless we were like bending the rod for 4 hours straight. I really didn't. And I can remember, you know, him just kind of being like, that's fine. You know, like if you want to come, you can come. Or if I know it's going to be really good fishing, that he might push a little bit and the intensity might show a little bit more. You know, kind of following your rules and your structure, like you said before, like he very much stuck to that. But I remember when it all turned. It was like a perfect day. The tuna bite had been good. I'd never caught a tuna before. I'd fished for him before. We actually went out with Rob Green when Rob bought the 32 H&H, you know, 15, 20 years ago. And I'd been tuna fishing before. I'd been like, you know, chumming, chunking, all that stuff back in the day.
Tuna wishing,
you know, doing my summer reading on the back of, in the cockpit of the Eastern Viking out of Green Harbor.
A couple of R.L. Steins.
Yeah, a couple of R.L. Steins. You know, and he's just like very like casual. Like, you know, if I wanted to learn how to rig a bait, that was fine. If I wanted to just like hang out and look at the bait well, that was fine too. He was just very in tune with the situation. Not taking it too seriously, but you could tell, you can tell because he's such an instinctual fisherman and person in general that like he's always like just like calculating it in his head and like when he could like push me in a certain direction or tailor in a certain direction. So that's, I mean, that's kind of what his approach was. And one other thing that he kind of started folding in the mix, like, you know, when we were in probably like eighth grade was, you know, my dad hasn't been a commercial or charter fisherman or, you know, sport fisherman forever. Like he is like one of the hardest workers on the planet. He's like a Renaissance man. He's done everything. He's been a contractor. He's done IT stuff. He's done it all. He's always been a hard worker. So like he kind of instilled that in us, but kind of pushed us in the fishing direction in regards to, you know, working and stuff all the time. So like he was the one that was like, you know, you should really work in the bait shop. You know, it's a great summer job, you know, this, that, and the other thing. And I was like, yeah, that sounds cool. And I did that. And like working in a bait shop, I mean, Dave, you know, it's like, you don't even have to be on a boat. That is like some of the best exposure you could ever have. I learned so much of Belsen bait and in other places. It's like, it's unbelievable. But you know, that was another big thing. And you alluded to it in your stuff and talking about getting kids into fishing and stuff, but to getting kids or anyone for that matter to that next level, to that intense level, like we're talking about, it really comes from, you know, pushing them to having that work ethic.
Yeah.
And that's where that intensity and that passion comes from, that attention to detail. And I think that's really what my dad was able to find that perfect balance with my brother and I and my dad. I mean, the three of us still fish together, you know, almost every day, but it wasn't like an exact, like I can't like bullet point it. It was just like this very organic. It's in his blood and it's apparently in our blood and it just ended up kind of working out the way it worked out. But how did your kind of whole progression evolve? I mean, like Frank's Ohio Midwest guy.
Crazy.
Taylor and I were very fortunate that our dad's kind of been in this forever. What about you, Dave?
Yeah, so totally different from the both of you. I grew up in Green Harbor. Super fortunate. The house that I grew up in is like right on the beach. My backyard opens right up to, you know, Green Harbor Beach, Berks Beach there. And so when you come, for anyone who knows Green Harbor, when you're coming out of the channel on your starboard side, my house I grew up in is right there, like on your starboard side. It's like on that dead end street. It's like couldn't be any cooler spot to grow up. Like in the summer from like, you know, as soon as you get out of school until you go back, everyone in Marshfield is at my house. Everyone's parked, you know, five deep in my driveway. And, but the cool thing growing up there was that like you look out your backyard and there's just a playground of like fishing, awesome fishing spots, flounder, striped bass, bluefish in the fall. Like it's crazy. So, I just saw all this stuff happening and was like, my family doesn't fish. No one in my family fishes still to this day, like doesn't fish. So I just saw it and I was like, I got to do this. And then I was very fortunate that I had a local tackle shop. It was Fisherman's Outfitter, and actually, take that back. It was J&B Bait and Tackle, and which was owned by Johnny White of Fisherman's Outfitter at the time. And I went, I would just go down there and hang out. And they, like, you know, I was lucky that who, you know, the guy that was running the shop, the manager who eventually became dad number two for me, Bob Pronk, like, he just took me under his wing and, you know, was like, if this kid's going to come here, hang out here every day, I might as well put him to work. So I'm sweeping floors and bagging bait. And then,
he's,
you know,
a great guy.
Oh, he's unbelievable. I can't say it enough. Like, literally, dad number two for me.
Yeah.
You know, taught me all the things that you, like, you want to know, like, as a, you know, like, work in business, like, how to run a register, like, you know, just from the business standpoint. But then, like, all the things, the fishing things, he connected me all to all the right people. So I ended up getting my, I alluded to this like a couple weeks ago, but, like, you know, I got my first job on a boat when I was 11, you know, doing bass trips to the race and stuff like that. And, you know, it was just, you know, cutting fish and scrubbing decks and super easy stuff. But because the tuna fishing wasn't that great back then, there wasn't a lot of stuff happening. And then, like, I remember, like, the first year that it turned the corner, and I'm like 13, maybe younger, maybe like 12. And it might have been like the next year, like after I started, and all of a sudden we're breaking out 130s because there's like fish showing up. And I remember seeing that first bluefin tuna. Like, I've been fishing for years now and catching striped bass and bluefish, and all of a sudden I see a giant bluefin. Like, to this day,
like a there's a giant bluefin, and there's a giant.
I don't know if it was just because I was 12, yeah, but this thing was an absolute submarine.
Yeah,
and I'll never forget it. And I just remember saying, "My life's over. Like, this is it. This is all I'm gonna do for."
Was there any individual captains that had a huge impact on your life?
Every one of them, every person I've worked for has, for better or worse, helped me become, like, I got a good grasp on, like, how I want to fish for the rest of my life. I want to enjoy it. I want, like you were saying, I want to have that intensity, but I'm so fortunate that I don't have to commercial. I don't have to catch a tuna fish every day to put food on the table. For those guys that do, I have, like, the utmost respect. And I mean, those guys know, they can call me at any point, and intel that I have, I'm happy to share, because I know how hard that is. But I don't have to do that, and I'm super fortunate. So there's all those guys along the way that help point me in this direction and get me on the path. Like, I mean, I've talked about Tucker. Like, I've known him for 15 plus years. You know, everything that he's taught me in every boat.
Sunbathing swordfish master.
Oh, yeah. How good is that?
Yeah.
I joked earlier today on Facebook, something about Tucker, and I said, I don't bet money against anyone who can troll up a 400-pound sunbathing swordfish. And it's just true. That's horseshoe, you know, up the rear. Tucker's like your brother.
Yeah.
Like, when it comes to catching fish, like, and running a boat and staying on good water and staying on a body of fish, there's no one like Tucker, and there's no one like your brother, and probably your dad too. I haven't had an opportunity to fish with your dad as much as I would
like
to.
You did one day, and he called where the fish were going to be within like 30 feet. Remember Riley sniffed him out in the fog?
That was like the craziest day of fishing.
Yeah.
We were the only ones fishing. It was it was a closed period, and we go out and just...
Oh yeah, we had like 3 or 4 fish that day.
Way more than that.
I digress. But yeah, but yes.
So
but,
I start.
You know, isn't it funny? Because it's like, that's what this whole discussion is really all about, right? It's giving back and helping other people. Like, all of these folks that have shaped us over the years, who have helped us, right? And it really comes down to helping others at this point to get those lifelong memories. And with your own kids, they're priceless. They're absolutely priceless. You know, it's like, if you can pass the passion down for something, you know, you guys know, I don't fish. I'm really privileged that I don't have to do that for a living either. And it's my hobby and I love it.
Totally.
Right? It's a passion.
The Bruce Wayne and the Batman life.
Yeah.
And, you know, so I'm a national sales manager. I travel around the country working with the financial advisors. I've got a team of people and, you know, we go all these big events for advisors. And whenever anybody brings up fishing, especially Wicked Tuna, they come running. You got to meet Frank and they bring me over and they pull out the phone. I got to, you know, show them the pictures of the fish and all that stuff. And I'll get like 10, 12 people around me and I'll be, they're all fascinated to hear this. And no less than 5 times I have had people come up to me after and say, I am completely envious of you. 3 times with guys and twice that blew me away with girls. Woman came up to me and said, I have absolutely no interest in fishing whatsoever, but I can't tell you how jealous I am of you. And I was like, where are you going with this? Right? Yeah. And she basically just told me, she's like, you have such an incredible passion when you talk about this. I want that. I don't have a passion in my life. And I've had numerous other people say that, you know? So it's like, if we can help pass that along to kids, I mean, what a gift, right?
It's unbelievable.
I mean, today the poor kids are bombarded with, you know, all this social media and everything's about the phone. And it's like, if you can help them to have a passion to get outside and, you know, get away from kind of some of that stuff, it's priceless.
Yeah.
Yeah. We live in such like a, I don't want to say watered down like world, but like kids are, you know, just immersed every day in social media and their phones and like, you know, like games and stuff like that. And like, you know, people don't have like, I don't want to say not everyone, but like most people don't have that like passion that like drives their life. Like fishing drives our life, you know, and people love seeing that in other, you know, in other people. So like I've been to this past fall, I was at a wedding and, you know, it's a buddy of mine from college. I don't really know that many people that are there and they're all like, you know, jokingly, my Instagram name. I didn't know Instagram was going to be a big thing when I got the handle.
It's perfect.
But they're like, you're Big Tuna Slut. And I was like, yeah. And they're like, start telling me stories. Like you were saying, you know, they just want to hear stories because like passions are so rare. You know, they're so rare these days that someone is like actually pursuing the thing that just, that gives them energy, that fulfills their life and like makes them happy. That like so many people are just there's lots of people that are passionate about golf, but so many people are just out swinging golf clubs because that's what their buddies do. But we're out doing the thing that we love to do with the people that we love to do it with. And it's the thing that makes us so happy. People say this to me all the time. They're like, how does your wife let you go out tuna fishing, you like on the weekends? And it's like, because it's what I've always done. Like it's been part of my life since before she was, you know, we've been together for 15 years. It was part of my life before she came along, which is so long ago that I couldn't possibly like,
it just makes you a better person. Honestly.
Yeah.
Like it's a lot of commitment and grind and frustration.
Yeah.
And, you know, I can't, you know, fortunately we all have significant others that like understand it, but like, it does. It makes us a better person.
But it's also not the thing that we picked up to get out of the house on a Saturday.
Right.
This is what people do for, like a lot of people do. They'll go get in a hobby so they can leave the house on a Saturday. When you're like getting out of work on Friday, going down to the boat, rigging up leaders until, you know, 10 o'clock at night, coming home, eating dinner, crashing for 2 hours and turning around and getting up to go fish for the day. That's not an excuse to get out of the house. That's a passion. And people recognize that.
Right.
It's like the women that you were saying, you know, got the guys and the women, but they recognize that in other people and they say, that's something special. And like, that's different than I see everyone else doing. It's not a hobby. It's not something that these guys are just using to get
to kill time
on the weekends. This is something that fulfills their life.
Yeah.
You know, you just hit on another thought that I didn't even think about, but you know, as you're right, we are all completely blessed that we have significant others that have allowed us to follow this passion, but there will come a point when the kids come around, and you guys are quickly coming to that, where you will not be able to fish at the rate that you do. You just can't. And you know, it's tough raising kids, and you know, you got to do it together. But I tell you what, that's one of the things that your wife's going to let you take the kids out, right? Because it's like she can then go off and do her day, and that again, you're changing what the goal is, right? Mm-hmm. And being able to relive that progression and get excited about catching a bluefish again or catching a small striped bass is going to be just as important. You know,
catching a 900-pound tuna.
It will. Believe me. Yeah. It's like in seeing that in your own kid is, I can't even describe that.
It's so funny that you say that because, you know, a couple weeks ago when we were talking about, you know, jumping boat to boat, and one of the things that I really stand firm on is, you know, again, I always phrase it is the expectations. And it's exactly the same when you have kids. It's no different. When you take kids on the boat, what's the expectation? They might not be able to verbalize it, but the expectation is have fun, bend a rod, make sure the conditions are right. Those are the expectations that you need to understand and put into play when you put kids on a boat, and you know, make sure they have a movie to watch or games to play, make sure they have some good snacks, make sure they have a beanbag chair to crash on if they need to, especially if you're in a center console, those are the things. But like, the way I think about it, you know, because most of the guys that I'm going with are older, I look at it as expectations. But like you said, with kids, those are goals, like goals for the day. Make sure we, you know, hit those marks and make sure that we're having a successful day.
Yeah.
It really is no different. It's no different. They're the crew. They're the people you need to please. Just like if you're a mate jumping on a 65-foot Viking and, you know, jumping on a new boat saying like, I got to put these guys on fish. It's exactly the same stuff. I want to make the owner and his buddies happy or his family happy. When you take kids out, I want to make the kids happy. How do you do it? You know, make sure you figure out what the expectations are and hit those marks.
Dude, you couldn't have wrapped this up any better than that. I mean, we've been going for 90 minutes. There's been some amazing conversation here, some amazing stories. Frank, thank you so much for agreeing to do this with us. I mean,
thank you for having me.
You are truly like, and I mean this from like the bottom of my heart, you are one of the best fishing storytellers I've ever met in my entire life. And it's been a pleasure being a friend with you, one of your friends for the last, I don't know, decade plus. I mean, like, it's funny. Like, I totally see, like, Dave, Taylor, myself, like you are us. It couldn't be any more of a mirror image. Just 20 years later. And far more wise than we are. But
not a difficult task.
Yeah, exactly. But no, thank you so much. This has been awesome. Just to wrap it up with our typical closing statement here in OG's three rules of fishing. You can't catch them if you don't have a hook in the water. Always trust your instincts. And the third one, you're just going to have to keep listening. Stay tight. Thank you guys for tuning into this episode of the Seabros Fishing Podcast. I'd like to thank our sponsors, Mass Bay Guides and Deep, for providing support for this episode. We also wanted to thank all the attendees that went to the February 29th Seabros Fishing Social Night. We had a great time, a lot of great feedback at the show, after the show, on social media. We're definitely going to try to do a few more of those next year, kind of small scale social nights with a workshop incorporated into it. If you haven't already, if you could please go on Apple Podcasts and search for the Seabros Fishing Podcast and give us a 5-star rating so we can keep getting exposure to more fishermen, specifically offshore fishermen around the world. We'd greatly appreciate that. We appreciate all the feedback that we've got on all our previous podcast episodes, and we're going to try to keep as much content coming out to you as possible. You can also follow us on Facebook and Instagram at Seabros Fishing. And we're going to put some more details about these episodes, pictures, all that good stuff. And you can also follow our charter fishing account at Mass Bay Guides.
That's it for today. Appreciate you listening. Everyone, stay tight.